Mute.
Can we make sure everybody?
Can we mute our mic? What sound?
No, as long as you.
As long as you are muted. Mm-hmm. Mute?
Yeah, it's
muted. Is it muted? Are you all muted?
Yes.
Also, we are connected here. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Boltina. I'm going to ask you to start with the apologies before I do the welcoming and intro remarks. And also, please flight our agenda for the benefit of those who don't have copies of our agenda for the meeting. Apologies. Mr. Boltina.
Oh, sorry, Chairperson. I didn't realize that I muted. No, Chair, I was saying thank you, Chairperson. The first one I have is Honorable De Freitas. He's in the meeting, Chairperson. He has indicated that he is going to leave at about 1 o'clock, Chair. And also the second one, Honorable Maneli has apologized because of another meeting that she has attended. Honorable Winkler is also in the meeting, Chair, although she has indicated that she is not well. She may not participate, but is in the meeting attending. Honorable Sithole as well will also take a bus to Parliament around about 12:30. So those are the apologies that we have, Chair, but as of now, we have sufficient quorum in the committee meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Boltina. Let me take this opportunity and welcome all members of Parliament present to our meeting. The department led by the Deputy Minister, and I want to from the onset to thank members of Parliament for holding the fort when I was not here. The committee continued with its responsibilities and did a sterling work, which I also was privy to see and get reports during our handover meeting with our support team of Parliament. We are holding our portfolio committee during an auspicious event or occasion, which is happening in Durban, where we are connecting from, which is the Africa's travel in Durban, where we're hoping that the entire portfolio committee will be part of. But because we ourselves are commanded and our support team is commanded, we could not get everyone here. The select committee from the NCOP in its entirety is part of this auspicious occasion. It is quite an insightful event, which I think many of us would have benefited from the knowledge that is shared here. 55 countries present as per the people who are speaking there, during the opening, 634 exhibitors, 625 buyers are present and part of this occasion. And there's interesting topics which are put together, which in my view are a transfer of knowledge, not to ordinary South Africans, but to us as well as legislators. Because if we talk digital transformation and innovation during this era of 4IR, it's a very interesting topic and a very important one, especially us as a country. We are also behind in terms of that 4IR. So we're going to be ahead in terms of knowledge, reimagining localism and regionalism in tourism. Also speaks direct to the people on the ground, and also to the importance of ensuring that we officialize those local businesses, street vendors and everyone else, so that they themselves are able to contribute to the GDP of our country moving forward, because tourism becomes a very important contributor to our economy. We are happy for the province of KwaZulu-Natal as a host that they've benefited from these auspicious events for sure. It sort of boosted their economy here in the province. And it would be remiss of me not to mention the fact that we are so disgruntled and so unhappy, and such that some of the members feel unwelcomed here because we were not acknowledged by the program director. And the minister, in the end, when she acknowledged the chair of the portfolio committee of parliament, he forgot to acknowledge the chair of the select committee of the NCOP. That breach of protocol is a very serious one. And protocol for us, it goes a long way, and such that members raise the serious issues. And those issues that they've raised with me, they are very critical, and they are not a threat, but a promise. So I've also raised that breach of protocol with the program director himself, because bureaucrats, they tend not to acknowledge us as parliamentarians. They think we are here to sit and listen to them, and that's it. They don't know that their fate is in our hands, because we are the ones responsible to approve their budgets for them to be able to execute their responsibilities in their workplace. So sharp issues were raised by the select committee, and the DG came to me when he picked up that breach of protocol, which is not reversible, but we are hoping after this meeting, we will come up with amicable solutions where the department has to apologize to parliamentarians that are here. And the worst part is that the select committee has been here since Sunday, but there was no acknowledgement of them. It took the speech of the minister to acknowledge one chairperson, which is the chairperson of this portfolio committee, and forgot the other. They blame it on the briefing, which is, in my view, it's a lame excuse, because we were received by the department on arrival. So our arrival for sure should have been registered by whomever that is responsible to register our presence and the worst part of it, they acknowledge the media with passion, but not members of parliament. So I thought I should bring that also as part of the welcoming so that you don't hear it from the grapevines. And I understand the anger that is out there. It will land in your ears, but the department is trying to manage the situation, and the DM also brought that matter to the attention of the department. Otherwise, everything else out here is very interesting, educational, and also an opportunity to transfer knowledge before we could take an international study tour. So all these countries and some of them, they are here. So that will be exchange of knowledge without us flying to their countries. So on those words, say, honorable members in the department, I wish to welcome all of you to this meeting, where we are going to receive the briefing by the department on their APP and proposed budget. And I must say 52 pages is a lot, but we are going to endure the presentation because it's very important. And for sure, members of parliament have also read the presentation, which was sent to us fairly on time. I welcome all of you.
Recording in progress.
And I'm going to now allow the department to present to us. But before that, I'll give the DM an opportunity to marshal his team accordingly and perhaps a few words before marshalling his team to present to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Portfolio Committee, and welcome back. We wish you a full recovery. We are meeting, as you have indicated, Chair, to present the before the portfolio committee the APP and the budget for this financial year 2022-2023. We are presenting this APP and the budget under the background that we all know that we are presenting this under the circumstances that is beyond our constraint in terms of the constraint financially on the fiscals that the country is facing. But we're also doing this under the challenges that are still with us of the COVID-19 pandemic, which had a huge devastating impact into the sector. And the sector is still reeling on that. That's why as we're meeting here in ICC, in Durban for this important event that is just, the minister just opened as part of a process of recovery. We know that this has not been happening for the past 2 years. But we're also meeting at the very time when we had witnessed the civil unrest that took place in July last year here in KZN and Gauteng. We're also having a meeting at the time of the recent devastating floods that affected KZN, part of the Eastern Cape, and part of Northwest. We want to start by extending our sincere apology for what has happened in the opening, in terms of the acknowledgement that should have taken place, which didn't. We want to apologize for that. It was a huge communication problem. It was not deliberate on the part of the minister. Yesterday, when I was opening the event on the small business yesterday, because we started yesterday, I was also not aware that the select committee is here, but fortunately I know that. So there was nobody briefed me that they are there, but at least I was able to see them and then went and greeted them. So I had to then in my speech acknowledge them because I've seen them, and I could understand the challenge the minister had, that she might have found herself in the same a predicament that I find myself yesterday, where there was no such a official indication that the select committees here and yourself. I'm sure her acknowledgement is special to you. It is a result of seeing you because she knows you. Not because of any information somewhere. And unfortunately, she might not know, I'm sure she might not know the members of the select committee, because since her arrival, we have not met with the select committee. So it could have been not because of any other thing, but it was as a result of lack of information given to her. So we'd like to really, really apologize and Indic will also extend our tomorrow meeting with the select committee. We're going to also extend that to them. Well, Peter, we are presenting this APP and the budget on the background, which as I've indicated, but we, as you know, we derive our mandate firstly from the Constitution, and the Constitution has listed tourism as a functional area that is responsible for all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and local. But we are also presenting under the Act that guides us, which is the Tourism Act of 2014, which emphasizes many things, but key amongst them is responsible tourism, so that it's able to benefit all South Africans. We have got also, as you know, in the process of review, but the white paper, the 1996 white paper, is still a document that is guiding us. As we have indicated, as you are aware, we are in the process of the review of that paper, and because there are a lot of development that has taken place since then. While the fourth industrial revolution, we've got the challenges of climate change, and all other related matters that needs a special attention which requires that we need to review that. We're also guided by the NDP, which is our 2030 vision, which has recognized that tourism is one of the main drivers for employment and growth. But more important is since the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic, the country has developed the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, of which subsequent to that plan by government, we then as a sector working together with the industry in the context of social compact, developed the tourism sector recovery plan, which is an intervention to ignite the recovery of the sector. So we are contributing towards the implementation of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, of which key amongst those is the question of the skills development, the question of gender and economic inclusion, the contribution towards the infrastructure. We are engaging with various programs around all those areas, the massification of public employment. We're also making some work around that as part of a contribution. But more importantly, we are in the process of activating the sector in the context of firstly the domestic market as a very key sector that must work as a pillar for the recovery of the sector. The regional tourism, where we're saying we need to protect the regional market and make sure that we deal with the market in a manner that contributes towards improving the arrival in South Africa. As you know, in 2019, the president announced that we must reach 21 million arrivals to South Africa by 2030. We have not yet revised or the target. We're still working on that, regardless of the setbacks that has been imposed to the sector by the COVID-19. So we are still trying to see how best to make sure that we deal with that particular way. So we're working together with provinces, as indicated, it's a concurrent function in the context of district development model to be able to expand and make sure that we expand new products, create opportunities for small towns, villages, townships, and make sure that we become as inclusive as possible. But one of the critical areas that we must understand is that in the process of doing this, there are some barriers. Some of these barriers, we need to work together, all of us, to deal with them. The issue of infrastructure, which is in the context of access to the products, it remains one of the critical areas. If you drive around to provinces, the road infrastructure leading to some of our products, it's a big challenge. Which then it's something that needs how to work together with provinces, especially in the department that is responsible for maintaining all those infrastructures, which is not our responsibility. But we need to see how to persuade them to understand that recovery for it to take place in the sector, it will require access, it will require the condition of our roads to be improved so that we're able to recover and create opportunities for our people. the challenges that we all the countries all facing, the inconsistent supply of electricity, water, which are responsibility of ESCOM and municipalities, are some of the issues that we need to work together. The challenges of safety for our tourists, as you know, we're working together, we've adopted that National Tourism Safety Strategy, working together with the South African Police Service, the two DGs, the DG of the department and the National Commissioner, signed an MOU on how to make sure that we deal with the challenges of creating a safer environment for our tourists. The issue of civil unrest, it's one of the issues that we must, how do we manage, because tourism is our travel. So if there is civil unrest, there's blockages everywhere, people are unable to travel, it does have a negative impact. For example, I just want to put an example. We've got a gate called Numbi Gate to Kruger National Park. A lot of villages around there. From time to time, there will be unrest, but it's not related to tourism. It's about service delivery. They will block the road. Tourists must come in, they can't come in. Tourists must come out to rush to the airport, they get blocked. So that on its own creates a huge problem. And as a result, it makes a usage of those routes that are in our communities, which when we developed it for their beneficiation, will have a huge impact. But it makes those routes not being recommended. I'll just take practical about Kruger, Kukuza area, because I know it. We've got that Numbi Gate, we've got the Kruger Gate, which passes in the village. So because of some certain, so they will always be advised to go to Malawan, because there's no community there. So there's no way they will ever be blocked. They will be encouraged to go to Komati Port, Kruger Gate, which is Crocodile, because there are no communities there. So that beneficiation along the route then in those where communities are gets affected because of that. So it's something that we need to have time to work with those communities to understand that their action, what impact does it have into the sector, but also into creating opportunities for themselves as well. So those are some of the things that we need to work together and see how to improve on that. Now, let me conclude by saying we are having a challenge that the whole world is confronted with of climate change, which present a lot of economic and social risks, but also create some opportunities in one way or another. So we must be resolute to, as a sector, in ensuring that we engage with these risks and explore whatsoever opportunity that the climate change bring, and how to mitigate it as a sector, so that we're able to make sure that we grow the sector, grow the economy, and create opportunities for our people. That's the comment, Chair. The DG, we've got the DG here, who will then be the one that is going to lead us. It's accompanied by the four DGs, DG Ngwenya for corporate, then DG Malan for international, and then DG Chaiti for, can't separate it, which is his name, which is a name. Oh, okay. Oh, Shamila is the name. Oh, okay. So DDG for destination, then DDG Sidwaba for TSSS. So they will be sharing responsibilities according to how the DG is going to allocate it. So with your permission, Chair, I'll request that we hand over to the DG. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tim. And thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, honorable members. We are going to start with program one, slide 14, and DDG Ngwenya, who's the DDG responsible for corporate management, will take us through that.
Mr. Can you slide the presentation? Please. Mr. Boldina. Okay, thank you, Petra.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. When DDG Ngwenya completes, she will be followed by DDG Malan, then followed by DDG Chetia, and then we will have DDG Sitwaba coming after DDG Chetia. Then we will go to the acting CFO, Mr. Maharaj Mohith, who is going to take us through the financials across all the various programs, what are we appropriating to and so on in that regard. And then we will conclude the presentation after that. DDG Ngwenya.
Thank you, DT. Good morning, Honorable DM, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. For Program 1 Administration for the financial year 2022-2023, we have committed 9 outputs. And the first output indicator relates to matters of audit and the financial statements and performance information. The target is for us to have an unqualified audit and over the 4 quarters. The first quarter is where we are going to then work on financial and non-financial performance information that we submit to AGFA and National Treasury. In the second quarter, we receive the report. And the third quarter is allocated to working on the implementation plan and reviewing our systems of internal control. And we therefore conclude the fourth quarter with the finalization of the implementation of the audit action plan. And the second output indicator relates to our contribution to the government's economic transformation agenda. And there are 2 output indicators that relate to that. One is on the payment of procurement of goods and services to SMMEs. We are committing that a minimum of 30% expenditure generated will be from SMMEs, and we have the same commitment over the 4 quarters. The second one relates to and this is a new indicator that was introduced for the financial year 2022-2023, where we are looking at 40% of all public procurement being generated from women-owned businesses. And the annual target is 40%, and we are committing that each quarter we will ensure that 40% of procurement comes from women. There is a national target and an expectation of payment of invoices, which then supports the transformation agenda too. And the commitment is that we will pay 100% of all compliant invoices within 30 days. And that is a commitment that we are expressing over the 4 quarters. Output indicator number 5 relates to having a capable and ethical workforce within the department, and is the percentage of vacancies. We are committing a vacancy rate below 10%, and we are going to maintain it throughout the 4 quarters. The output indicator number C relates to the implementation of employment equity. We are committing to maintaining SMS and at SMS level female representation at 50%, and that is a commitment we are going to work on throughout the four quarters. The representation from people living with disability, we are committing at 3%, and we are making a commitment on all the four quarters. Output indicator number 7 focuses on capacity development through the implementation of the workplace skills plan. And we are committing to 100% implementation of the workplace skills plan. And in the first quarter, we are at 25%. The second quarter, we are going to increase it to 30%. In the third quarter, it's 25%, and the final quarter will then be 20% implementation. Output indicator number 8 is about internal audit and relates to the percentage implementation of the annual internal audit plan. The annual target is 100% implementation of the plan. And in the first quarter, we will focus on 20%. The second quarter, we are committing to 30%, and the third quarter, and the final quarter will be 20%. The first and the fourth quarter are important because those are areas where we have audit AGSA in the department, and therefore we have allocated less time to also be able to service the Auditor General of South Africa. The indicator, output indicator number 9 relates to communication and specifically on the communication strategy and the implementation plan. We want to finalize our comm strategy and implement the plan. And the target is 100%, which is a target we are maintaining throughout the four quarters. So 100% of quarter one will be implemented, 100% of quarter two targets, 100% of quarter three, and finally 100% of quarter four. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM, DG, and colleagues. I will be presenting program 2, which focuses on tourism research policy and international relations. In essence, the program focuses on four areas, research and knowledge management, which is the first one, then policy planning and strategy. We do the oversight over South African tourism, and we are also responsible for international relations and cooperation. We have outlined our key deliverables on slide 17, but I think I will speak to that in the next slide when I also speak to the quarterly targets. If we can please move. Thank you very much, Petra. Our first output indicator speaks to our number of monitoring and evaluation reports on tourism projects and initiatives developed. This indicator includes the M&E work we do on departmental programs. We have 5 reports that we are focusing on in the current financial year. The first one will focus on the evaluation of the resource efficiency project. That is the project, a project that was implemented within the department. So we will look at the evaluation of the project with the aim of having our final report ready by the end of quarter four. The second report that we will be developing is the report on the monitoring of the capacity building programs. that includes the hospitality youth program, the national youth chefs training program, the tourism monitors program, and the food safety quality assurance program. Also with the aim of finalizing this project by the end of the financial year with key deliverables per quarter. Our third project is our annual State of Tourism report that we develop. For this year, it will be 2021-22 State of Tourism report that we will publish by the end of quarter three. Then our fourth report or report is actually four quarterly reports. That is our implementation reports that we develop on the tourism sector recovery plan. Deputy Minister did mention in his opening remarks we refer to the tourism sector recovery plan, and as a team we are responsible to coordinate progress on the plan. And then the next target, we, as part of the work that we did in the previous financial year on the framework of our analytics framework, one of the gaps that were identified speaks to the availability of tourism statistics at a provincial level. So we, in addressing that, partly addressing that gap, we will be developing a report on the state and availability of key tourism statistics and resources at the provincial level, with that work being completed by the end of the financial year to also inform the next steps in addressing these gaps, also taking into consideration the nature of tourism being a concurrent function. Next slide, please, Petra. Our next output indicator speaks to our number of information and knowledge systems that we develop. In the current financial year, we will be developing two. The first one speaks to the Tourism Skills and Employment Portal that we would work together with the relevant branch in the department to ensure that portal is implemented by the end of the financial year. And we will also work on a tourism data analytics system that will prioritize the sentiments analysis by the end of the financial year as well. Our third indicator speaks to our regulatory initiatives. Deputy Minister also referred to the review of the white paper on the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa. And our target is to have a white paper on the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa submitted for approval by the end of the financial year. It is a process that commenced in the previous financial year, and it's something that we want to have ready for submission for approval by the end of this financial year through the cabinet processes. Our fourth indicator speaks to the work that we do around our oversight function of the public entity, and we are therefore as part of our oversight role, we are developing reports on governance and performance of South African tourism, and we do that on a quarterly basis, so there will therefore be four reports that we will develop in the current financial year. Next slide, please, Petra. This output indicator works towards South Africa's tourism showcase at priority markets, and it speaks to the number of fora that we prioritize to advance our interest as South Africa, our tourism interest at a regional, continental and global level, but specifically through multilateral and other groupings. We are focusing and prioritizing on six fora, which is the UNWTO, World Tourism Organization. South Africa has become a member of the Executive Council once again at the General Assembly last year, which means that Minister is also representing South Africa on the Executive Council of the UNWTO. The G20 tourism ministers, also the BRICS tourism ministers, SADC, Indian Ocean Rim Association, IORA, as well as the AU. And we are supporting minister participation, but also ensuring that our interest as South Africa is driven through our membership of those platforms, and there's also specific targets per quarter with regard to these platforms. Next slide, please, Peter. We have also targeted specific initiatives to facilitate regional integration. We have started with a program in the previous financial year where we have outreach programs to the diplomatic communities, that is specifically South Africa's diplomatic communities abroad. And we have seen a good response and outcomes out of those initiatives. So we have also targeted to continue with these. This outreach program, and we have targeted two in the current financial year. We have a number of years ago started to host annual best practice sharing of best practices workshop, mainly use these platforms as a vehicle for the implementation of our the signed MOUs, especially with African countries. As part of the MOUs is we have a commitment to share our experiences with amongst each other. And we have found that having this workshop where countries, not only two countries, but in all the countries that we have signed MOUs present, it enhanced the sharing of knowledge as all the countries are able to share their best practices. And we host one a year, usually in quarter four of the year. So thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That is program two, and I'm handing over to DDG Jet.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable GM. I'll take you through the destination development indicators. As summarized, there are three areas of work that we engage in. We are involved in destination planning and investment coordination. We are also involved in tourism enhancement of products that already exist, and in some instances, we do create new products. And then through our Working for Tourism program, which funds both skills development, the DDGs that Baba will talk to, we also fund tourism infrastructure projects across the country. We have nine indicators which are summarized below, and I will take you through those in detail. The first three indicators talk to the work that we're doing in destination planning. Honourable members may recall that we completed several master plans for tourism in various areas, and the work that we're currently doing with regards to the master plan is to integrate the initiatives from our master plan into the DDMs of OR Tambo District, Etegweni, Ixhlikhaseme, the Namakwa District, and essentially, the indicators for OR Tambo, Ixhlikhaseme, and Namakwa District for the first quarter is to actually work on drafting this information into the one plan for those districts, and then actually progressing them into concepts And then from the concepts, actually prioritizing various initiatives within the districts. And then the last quarter, looking at how we can take those forward into the implementation modalities. What I would like to indicate is that in Itigwini, because we have commenced with some of this work a little bit earlier than the other districts, we are in fact then able to move some of the work in Itigwini into more detailed draft concepts. And that speaks then to the second set of indicators for the four quarters. With regard to the budget resource network, honourable members might also recall that we have done some significant work in the department, first in defining the number of products that we have across the country that are in the provincial space, and then taking those forward into what will become a budget resource network and brand concept. Essentially, the costing for implementing this is quite a significant amount. So we've had to break this down then into smaller pieces of work. And what we're doing now is actually looking at the pilot that we ran last year, assessing the lessons that we've learned from it, and actually using that to inform the work going forward into our conditional assessment work, and then actually looking at how we improve the modalities for implementation. The third set of work then looks at work that we'd also commenced previously. So we're now in phase three of this work, where we are in fact implementing our precinct methodology for townships. And we're working in Khalishiwe and in Vilakazi Street. And at the end of the year, we are looking at having the statutory planning processes in place for the work that we are wanting to do in those two townships. Honourable members may also be aware that when you work in an infrastructure place, planning can take anywhere between 12 and 18 months. And so this is why over the next year, we're wanting to make sure that all of our statutory agreements, which would be things like EIAs, et cetera, are in place for the infrastructure work to then commence in the following financial year. Next slide, please. The next two set of indicators then speak to the work that we are doing in an investment space. The first one is around the pipeline of nationally prioritized projects, which are both brownfield and greenfield projects. And the indicator for that, because we actually can't predict how many come into our pipeline at any given point in time, is to really produce a quarterly report on the work that we're doing in supporting both brownfield and greenfield initiatives. The next indicator then is the work that we do in taking this these projects to a platform. And essentially, we are in fact then going to work on our concept in the first quarter, finalize the preparations around it in quarters two and three, and then actually proceed with the platforms that we are taking these projects to. The last slide then talks to the work that we are doing in destination enhancement, and we are running an infrastructure maintenance program in our national parks, which will come to an end this year. But over the next year, we will continue to run that program in 19 national parks. And we are also, of course, expanding that program into provincial owned assets. And those assets are basically in all nine provinces. And then the last piece of work that we are completing, and honorable members will be familiar with, is the work on the 30 community-based tourism projects. Each one of these, of course, has an individual project plan, and we will then monitor the implementation of those projects over the four quarters. Our last target then, honourable members, is the target around our expanded public works program. And this target, of course, encompasses both the work that we're doing in skills development as well as the work we're doing in infrastructure. We have 4,104 work opportunities that will be created through those pieces of work over the next year. And the breakdown then of the targets is per quarter, so that is achieved. That concludes the presentation on destination development. I will now hand over to DDG Sakwaba. Thank you.
Sorry, I wasn't aware that I'm still muted. If you go to the next slide, please. I apologize. I was muted. The next slide. In terms of the output to accelerate the transformation of the tourism sector, we will implement a one incentive program, which is the Green Tourism Incentive Program. What we are going to do in quarter one up to quarter four, we will have an adjudication meeting, meetings that are normally convened by our partner, IDC. It is in this meeting where applications are considered and that awards to those qualifying applications are made. So we will be attending to the consideration of applications in quarters. We are targeting one adjudication meeting per quarter. Regarding programs aimed at stimulating domestic tourism, we are looking at a domestic tourism awareness campaigns, mainly to enhance the culture of traveling within the country, targeting those who previously will not have the opportunity to travel. From quarter one to quarter four, we will implement a campaign. Regarding our incubation programs, for this financial year, we have four that will be under implementation. Members will recall that we had three more, which was the Mir, Palaburwa, and I remember the other one, which have since closed. The three have since closed. We have been able to implement them over, I think, two financial years. So this year, we are continuing with the Tech Innovation Incubator, the Tour Operator Incubator, and Food Services Incubator. I must say here at the end of later on, we will have a demonstration of the incubators that are within our Food Services Incubator. We will also have one community-based enterprise incubation program that we will be implementing. The first quarter, the incubation support and development program, it has to be implemented up until the last quarter, that is quarter four, where we will be developing the closeout reports. Now, those reports are very informative in that we are able to see if we are really gaining ground in terms of supporting our SMEs. Next slide. to increase women participation in the tourism sector. We have the Women in Tourism Business Development and Support Program, which we will implement nationally, targeting 225 women, but selecting 25 per province. In the first, second, and third quarter, the program is continuing. I must add that it has got a mentoring as well. It's not only theory, but we do allocate mentors for the women to be able to run successful and sustainable businesses. Programs that we have prioritized to enhance visitor services and experiences, therefore, we will continue with the implementation of the service excellence standards. We are incorporating the norms and standards for safe tourism operations, and we will be targeting small towns and tourism, supporting tourism products. In the first quarter, we will report on the implementation of the service excellence standards. We will perform stakeholder consultation, seeking endorsement of the plans on how to reach out. We will give a report in terms of the work that was done in the first quarter, but the second quarter, we will hold a roundtable discussion. We will continue with capacity building. In the third quarter, we provide a report. We are targeting identification of needs analysis and the support structures that are to be put in place to implement the service excellence. In the last quarter, there will be a report, and then we will be assisting in terms of establishment of those structures. Regarding programs that we have prioritized as well for implementation, we continue with the implementation of our tourism monitors program in all the nine provinces. It's continuing up until the last quarter, where we will provide annual reports with regards to the achievement. This is where we are supporting work opportunities that the PDG Chetia has spoken to. We will be embarking on a program to establish a centralized database of tourist guides. We are currently conducting a database assessment of the provinces. They are registered in terms of making sure that we partner with national, with provincial registers in terms of setting up their registers. We will report on the outcomes of the assessment and then develop a project plan in the fourth quarter, and the database will be implemented. We are planning to have four tourist safety campaign sessions to deal with the crime and the perception of crime, especially in those hotspots that have been identified, which we will also continue to identify with provinces and major attractions. We will implement awareness campaigns. The plan is really to, when we are implementing domestic tourism awareness campaigns, we team together with these campaigns in terms of tourist safety awareness, with the intention to pass information to our our people that tourism is a diamond for all of the communities. At the same time, when we are embarking on inculcating that cultural travel, we also share information on the benefits of tourism and that we begin to take care of our tourists. To enhance skills in the tourism sector, we have four capacity building programs. One will be to train and place 500 retrenched and unemployed youth on various skills and development programs. For this quarter, we are developing a skills development program, identifying the skills that we will be a training on. We will recruit and onboard participants. We will also train and deliver and also be able to place participants within the workspaces. The training will continue in the other quarters, which is quarter 3 and 4. We will identify and train 500 SMMEs and 2,500 unemployed and retrenched youth on the norms and standards for safe tourism operations in all 9 provinces. We have changed in terms of how, when after COVID, how then we begin to enhance safety, especially in our operations, in alignment with the tourism sector recovery plan, where we need to build confidence for the tourists to choose us as a destination, a safe destination for that matter. The training of the 2005 for the first quarter, we are looking at 1,850 from the tourism capacity building projects that we will be running under the first target there, but then 650 will be sourced from the TVET colleges. The training will continue up in the three quarters as well. Next slide. The NTCE is currently under preparation. We have just listed the 2021 NTCE successfully together with our host province, which is Gauteng. This quarter, we are planning for the 2022 NTCE. There will be a project plan that we are developing. We will host the NTCE in the third quarter, and then in the last quarter, we'll develop a closeout report, which is normally very helpful in terms of us improving on the hosting of the NTCE. And I must say, we do assist provinces in terms of hosting their tourism careers and expo as well. We will train and we will enroll 30 chefs in the recognition of prior learning process for them to obtain professional qualification or definition in line with the project plan. These are chefs that have been in the game for some time now, but they do not have the qualifications. In the first quarter, we will select, recruit, and do the induction. Second quarter, we do the enrollment in the second quarter and third quarter. In the last quarter, we will conclude and then develop a report. Next slide. Oh, that was all. Thank you very much, Jane.
We will go to the finances and budgets.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable DM, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to present the budget for the 2022-23 financial year and over the MTF. The first slide reflects the overall budget allocated for the MTF. Focused on 22-23, we have 2.491 billion that has been allocated to the department. For administration, we have 325.111 million. And for tourism research policy and international relations, we have a budget allocation of 1.415 billion. This includes SAT allocation of 1.3 billion. SAT comprises 53% of our budget. Destination development has been allocated at 393.871 million for 2022-23. This includes an allocation of 281.478 million for the EPWP program. The program Tourism Sector Support Services receives a budget allocation of 356.607 million for 2022-23, included in this allocation is an amount of 225.172 million for the TIP program, that is a tourism incentive program. The budget split is reflected in the graph below that. We will move on to the next slide. It gives us a breakdown of our budget for economic classification. Compensation of employees for 22-23, we've received 370.766 million in our baseline for 22-23. What I should mention is that we've received an additional allocation of 30 million per annum for filling of vacant posts, just to refresh members, that we have had a budget cuts to the COE ceiling for several years, and in that constrained environment, we couldn't actually fill posts as we would have ideally liked to. So this actually will allow us to now strengthen our capacity of the department in terms of its human resources to fulfill some of those objectives we set aside in the APP. The goods and services, we have a budget of 550.364 million allocated. Transfers and subsidies is 1.565 billion and capital assets is 4 million and 4.835 million. Moving on to the next slide. What we have before us is the breakdown per program of the budget into its sub-programs. We have for administration, we have five sub-programs, which is ministry, has an allocation of 40.069 million. Program administration management, 3.3 million. Corporate management has 182.169 million. Financial management, 62.251 million. And office accommodation, 37.299 million. Into its next slide, please. If we move to the next slide, we see that this is the breakdown of Program 1's budget into its economic classification. Compensation of employees for Program 1 is 174.097 million for 22-23. Goods and services is 147 million. Transfers and subsidies is 188,000 and capital as 3.527 million. If we move to the next slide, this gives us a breakdown of our budget for tourism, research policy, and international relations. The sub-program breakdown is tourism, research policy, and international relations management has received 9.7 million in 22-23. Research and knowledge management, 31.44 million. Policy planning and strategy is 15.612 million. South African tourism is 1.329 billion, which is 93% of this program budget. International relations and cooperations, 29.977 million. That's giving us a total of 1.4 billion under this program. Next slide, please. Into its economic classification, compensation of employees for program two is 57.3 million. Goods and services is 21.983 million. Transfers and subsidies is 1.335 billion. And capital assets is 1.099 million. Moving to the next slide is the program budget for destination development. Destination development has four sub-programs. Destination development management, which has a budget of 28.3 million for 22-23. Tourism enhancement is 23.037. Destination planning investment coordination is 30.8 million. And working for tourism is 311.653 million. Broken down, next slide, please. Broken down into its economic classification, compensation of employees for 22-23 is 59.9 million. Goods and services is 333.8 million. Transfers and subsidies, there's no allocation there. Capital assets is 140,000 for program two. Moving on to the last program, which is program four, tourism sector support services. Sub-program tourism sector support services management has been allocated 11.3 million in 22-23. Tourism human resource development is 30.329 million. Enterprise development and transformation is 47.6 million. tourism visitor services is 25.3 million, and tourism incentive program is 241.958 million. Broken down into its economic classification, compensation of employees has an allocation of 79.3 million, goods and services 47.2 million, transfers and subsidies is 229.9 million, and capital assets has been allocated 69,000 for the 22-23 budget. The next slide illustrates the breakdown of projected receipts. I should mention that we are not a revenue generating department. These are miscellaneous receipts that we receive and pay over to the revenue fund. The first item there is sales of goods and services other than capital assets for 2022-23, we project 171,000. Interest and dividends and rent on land is 104,000. Sales of capital assets is 65,000. And financial transactions in assets and liabilities is 2.365 million, giving us a total projected receipts of 2.7 million. That brings me to the next slide, sorry. Next slide, please. I think the next one. Implications of national tourism budget reductions over the medium term and impact on the strategic and annual performance plan. One of the main programs that will be impacted is the expanded public works program budget has been reduced by 81.579 million since 2020-21. The yearly budget allocation in 2021 was 363.057 million and was reduced to 281.478 million in 2022-23. The budgets for 2023-24 and 2024-25 are 282.944 million and 292.058 million respectively over the MTF period. The EPWP budget funds both the tourism skills and infrastructure development projects. The decreased budget results in a reduction in the number of work opportunities that the department can create through the EPWP program. That brings me to the end of my portion of the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, that completes our presentation.
Thank you very much, DG and your team for the presentation. I'm now going to allow members of Parliament and the Portfolio Committee to deliberate on the presentation as tabled by the department. And I see no hands. Honorable Lusizo Makubela.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson and Member of Parliament. Can I ascertain whether I'm audible? I'm connecting from a remote distance. I'm on my way to Parliament.
You are audible.
I have two questions I want to pose to the department. The first question is on program one. The DDG mentioned the fact that one of the targets is to ensure that the department receives an unqualified audit opinion in terms of the work. But in the two previous financial years, the department has received unqualified audit opinion, but it had matters of emphasis and there were repeat findings from the Auditor General. So when we're talking about repeat findings, it means the issues that were addressed in the previous financial year and which which the auditor general pointed out, which were not addressed, and then they were repeated. So I just want to find out, in terms of specifically the repeat findings, what are the measures that are put in place to ensure that the department does not regress in its audit reporting and audit findings in terms of what the Auditor General has found. So DDG, please talk to the repeat findings, the systems that you have put in place. The second question that I have is for Program 3, Destination Management. In this program, we have learned that the department has brought in DBSA as an implementing agent to ensure that the projects that are implemented by the department are given over to this implementing agent in the form of DBSA. However, the portfolio committee has not had any privy to this memorandum of understanding or the contract that is signed with DBSA in this DBSA process, what entails the process and what will DBSA do to ensure that these programs are implemented without any wasteful and fruitless expenditures occurred. So I just want to find out from the DDG and from the DG to say, when is Parliament going to be given this information of what entails the contract or the understanding, the memorandum of understanding between yourself and DBSA, and when do you intend to take on board as the portfolio committee, so that when we hold you accountable or when you report to Parliament on the projects, we understand fully this is what was in the scope of DBSA and this is what was the scope as the department, that you do not come to us and then blame DBSA for poorly implementing the project. It is only these two questions that I have, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first is, what is the real impact of the 22-23 budget allocation to the mandate of the Department of Tourism? How will the Department of Tourism be affected by the Treasury note on the decision of the Constitutional Court on preferential procurement that has actually put advertising new tenders in abeyance? Will the available budget allow the department to implement all the interventions that it's envisaged to implement the tourism sector recovery plan? What collaborative projects is the department implementing with other government departments to promote sector recovery? And maybe that could be also with reference to what Deputy Minister Fish has said about the infrastructure projects and how they impact tourism, especially in villages, towns and dorpies. Then, why is the department still planning to take another whole year to finalize the review and development of the tourism policy when there's already been so many delays over the past few years to conclude the process? Just got two more. How far is the process of appointing the new chief financial officer gone? And then with regard to the floods that have recently occurred in KwaZulu-Natal, has the department done an assessment of the impact that this has had on tourism businesses and the sector? And if it has, what have these engagements been? If not, when will these engagements take place and where will they take place? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pemban.
Thank you, Chairperson. And greetings to all my colleagues and the staff. Chairperson, I've got one question, which is about the internal audit. I'm asking if this time around the internal audit results will be taken serious and not undermined like before, because we have heard that in the reason why the AG's report is always not reflecting good things, good results out of the department's work and SAT work is because they undermine the recommendations from the internal audit team. So I want to know if they can assure us that this time around we're not going to get any repetitions of wrongdoings and all that, because they don't consider the team that is paid for, but their work is not taken seriously. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, honorable members. Honorable Mbuche, I'm sure she has network problems because I saw her hand was up earlier. DG, I'm going to allow you to respond.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members for the questions. I will ask, maybe I should attempt to provide the responses, given that I've asked the DDGs to do the presentations, Honorable Chairperson. We will be ready at any given point in time that the honorable members, the portfolio committee would want us to brief them in terms of the work of the DBSA, what are the contractual arrangements, what does it entail, what projects are they dealing with, what are the processes involved. And we do believe that might assist also, Honorable Chairperson, to take the honorable members through the various stages of how we execute the project. So some of the processes take longer because they are required steps. But when that has actually been explained up front, I think that would also assist that we would be on the same page, so to say, with the honourable members. So we will be ready to make that particular presentation. On the matter of the audit outcome and what measures are we putting in place to address this, there were in the past, there was one matter in particular that came up twice, and it related to the issue of stating the local content in the tenders, and it was not stated. We implemented consequence management in that regard, but beyond that, we have also in the current audit plan that we presented to the portfolio committee in the past, we included a particular step for the head of supply chain to be a signatory, so that in each of the things that are being done, he would have actually gone through these things and not only rely on what would have actually been done by the functionaries. So that has actually been brought into that. There is one area, Honorable Chairperson, which is a little bit of a challenge. It persists and it seems it is persisting on the The reason for that seems to be the sort of slight contradiction in the two instruments that we're supposed to be using. It's the issue of verification of BEE status of the department itself. We are expected, Honorable Chairperson, that verification result must be submitted within a month after we have concluded the process of the auditing of the financials and so on. Now, the regulations, the triple B regulations are saying that we should not use interim statements, we should use the final audited. And what we receive, when we receive, Honorable Chairperson, the audited financials from the AG, they come with a very specific letter that goes to the accounting officer that says, this is not to be shared with anybody as yet until it has actually been tabled. So the actual period when it is deemed to be a usable document is when it is actually tabled. But that period, to be able to then make sure that we are in a position to finalize the entire verification, going through the financials, going through the source documents and everything, and ultimately being able to say within that particular month, we have been able to conclude this. That seems to be a challenge. We submit, but there would always be a flag to say this submission should have actually been before this particular period. But that challenge is the challenge we are also raising and discussing with the Triple B Commission as to how best we could actually deal with this. It's a system-wide issue. So that's one area that we believe going forward, we're hoping that there will be some sort of relief that would come from the side of the Commission. But we believe broadly that the plan that we've put in place is assisting us quite a lot in terms of keeping track. We've got weekly meetings that we're also holding to make sure that we go through these things and be able to confirm. Are we in a position to confirm that the things that we were concerned about are things that would still, that would come back or they would never come back again? The last area in terms of these repeat areas, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the area that pertains to the people that do business with the state. So we've got a good hold, a very good grip on people that are coming from the department. We don't have a problem with that. People that are outside the department, the DPSA has got a website where we are able to then put the details of those that are deemed to be successful bidders so that we are able to see whether they are on PESAL or not. The unfortunate thing is we don't have a system across the board. We don't have a system that enables us to find people that are in security services, as an example, because they are not necessarily on the same database as ourselves. People that are working in the municipalities, they are not in the same database as ourselves. So we are saying that for those, we will actually go for them if they are picked up that this is the issue, then we'll have to deal with that through consequence management, because there isn't a system that would enable us to detect specifically that these people are actually within the fold of government. So those are areas that we are tracking, we keep tracking. We are so far satisfied that our tracking is actually yielding better results. In some instances, we pick up that a person did have a PESAL number. And then when we go deeper, we find that this is a person who has actually retired a couple of years back, but the PESAL number still appears. And in some instances, we would have disqualified that person only to find that this person actually is fully qualified. So it does have a slight impact in terms of the processes that may delay a little bit, but in terms of the actual value, we are getting value with regards to the results that we are picking up. The areas, Honorable Chairperson, perhaps maybe I should, whilst we are on the audit issue, also indicate there's a question that was raised by Honorable Muteka. We always take to heart and implement the recommendations of the internal audit. We also do the same with the recommendations of the risk management committee, and we do the same also with the recommendations of the internal audit committee. And we go through those particular processes. When we do the presentations to the internal audit committee, the AG is present at all those particular meetings throughout the process. So we will ensure that as we continue, we strengthen the controls, that they ensure that there is a working together with all other assurance bodies. We have adopted the combined assurance model, and in that combined assurance model, it is management, it is the accounting officer, the minister. We send to the minister reports on a regular basis with regards to the implementation of our audit plan, and then it is the audit committee as well as internal audit itself. What is also important to mention whilst I'm dealing with these issues of audit is the fact that we are to a degree, Honourable Chairperson, and I think it links to the question that was raised by Honourable Wendy. We are to a degree affected by the Concord decision as it relates to the preferential procurement Act regulations. And the issue there is that we would have the terms of reference for some of the investigations, Honourable Chairperson, that you would recall the meeting that we had when we were presenting the annual report, and we made recommendations that we should pursue those. But we are not in a position in some of these cases to commence with the procurement. We have written and requested of National Treasury to obtain a deviation in this regard. But until that has been authorized on their side, we are not able to actually proceed with the actual procurement of the independent people that would assist us in this regard. And we even tried with other departments to say, don't you have people that maybe are on a retainer and so on, and we were not necessarily successful in that regard. So it is having an impact. It's everything that we have got to procure. Last week we were advertising a couple of positions, and some of those positions we wanted to take them to newspapers, and we had to settle for social media platforms and so on, together with making sure that they are in the government circular for positions, because the advertisement would have been above 30,000 rands. So there is definitely an impact. We have used some of the existing contracts in other departments, in entities and so on, so that we can have a sense of continuity. But things that are not necessarily about continuity, they are definitely affected. And this might also affect, in particular, quarter one with regards to our performance for this current financial year. The DM did mention at the beginning that we are in a fiscally constrained environment. So we do take that into account, and we try and maximize on the resources that we've got. There are emerging issues that at the moment we don't necessarily have resources that were appropriated to such, but these are emergencies that need to be thought about, and how best we move forward and so on. The floods would definitely cost money, that figure, I don't want Honourable Chairperson to venture into that, because the technical people are putting together the actual quantification and so on to make sure that we are, because it's a continuous process. And whilst we're busy with KZN and Eastern Cape, Northwest came into the fold during that same period. And so we've got to be able to give such a figure when all of those things have actually been put together, and at least the figure that we're giving should be as close to the final figure as possible. The CFO appointment, we have done the whole process, the interviews have taken place, the vetting processes for a recommended candidate and so on. So we are at that particular stage of approvals. In terms of the policy review, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I think I do need to give a little bit of background on this. Because we understand and we appreciate the concerns of the honourable members with regards to the delays. What happened was we had in 2019, I think it was the end of 18-19 financial years, we were ready with a document that was destined for Parliament. And that document was basically a document on some proposed amendments to the legislation. So we're going to go through the cabinet process, and that document would have actually been gone through. Then there was the document was did not go through that process. There was the appointment of the policy review committee, and that policy review committee was going to look at that document, but also to look at other matters of policy and in consultation with stakeholders. They commenced their work and they were supposed to finish their part of this work September 2021. Come September 2021, they requested for an extension. September, October 2021, they requested for an extension. Extension of which was going to end of January 2022. So they brought us a document, brought the minister a document at the end of January 2023, February 2022. Now that particular document that they've given to the minister must apply herself, and because this is a committee that includes different stakeholders. In some instances, the minister would require to look at, can this be done in law? Will this be feasible? Is this an actual policy or is this a strategy? And what of this strategy, what of this policy would require to go into legislation, all those kinds of things. So that process needs to unfold so that what the minister then puts before the public for comment is a document, and that would have gone through the cluster processes, it would have gone through the cabinet process, then it goes to the public, minimum duration of which should be a month, but for something this big, it might be 2 months. And once that has actually been concluded, then it comes back and all the inputs that are coming from the public members must be duly considered and recorded, and with reason why some of them are deemed not acceptable and why some of them have actually been accepted from minister's policy decision point of view. And that would then again go back into the cluster processes, the cabinet process, and ultimately then come to cabinet. So we are making sure that we accommodate that particular process, and that is why we have actually indicated that it may take a bit longer to finalize that particular process. I think those were the questions for Honorable Chairperson. I will hand over back to you, Francis. Thank you.
Thank you so much, TG. We are supposed to conclude our meeting by 1:30 so that we are able to join the plenary in Parliament. Some of us, there's questions on the platform from Honorable Mbushe. Two questions. She welcomes and appreciates all the presentation.
Honorable Chair.
And the question to this is that given the delays on the white paper on the development and promotion of tourism, which were caused by a number of reasons. I'm sure she wanted to write a number of reasons. What plans does the department have to fast track the review process, Chair, in relation to the DDM? What plans do you have? The second question is, what plans does the department have to improve the current situation of the spheres of government working in silos? And the case in point is recent experience during our oversight visit to Limpopo at the Gobe Lodge, whereby the MEC, the Limpopo EDEAT, PC Chair, District and locals, not aware of such a tourism project. How is the 2022-2023 APP aligned to the DDM in all district municipalities? I saw Mamuqheko raising her hand. Are you fine now because you lowered your hand? Mamuqheko? Okay, not here. Can you quickly respond to those questions? Honorable Winkler, can you lower your hand? It has become a legacy hand now. Response, department?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to ask DDG Chetia to speak to the district development model. On the matter that Mbushe has raised specifically, which pertains to the Limpopo province, Honorable Chairperson, I had asked Chetia to go with the portfolio committee so that she could take them through the details of what is going on and so on. But I'm going to take up this matter with the provincial colleagues. The project, I think, if I'm not mistaken, has lived for a period that spans 3 to 4 years. So there is something in the end of reports that shouldn't be dealt with. We encountered a number of letters that we sent to the provinces. We are having the min-mec on Thursday. The projects are an agenda item there. And matters of coordination, even the matters that came up on the meeting when we were discussing the annual report with regards to the tourist guides and the challenges that we experienced in various provinces and so on, that's a matter that is on that platform for discussion between the national and the provincial. So all these issues of coordination, we're trying to make sure that we have as frequent min-max as possible so that we are able to close some of those gaps. But we will take it up with the colleagues in the province because they are familiar with the project, they know about the project, but they have not necessarily addressed their principal in this regard. This is Chetty.
Thank you very much, DG, Honorable Chair. The last question I think is from Honorable Pushe. It relates to the district development model. I would like to indicate to Honorable Members that slides 33 to 35 of the presentation do in fact outline the work that we're doing on the district development model. Within the department, what I would like to indicate is that we have allocated a senior manager to be a champion for a specific district, so that within the department, we have someone who is very familiar and aware of the DDM processes that are happening in a specific district, so that we can coordinate our efforts. In terms of that. The second thing that the department has then done is to actually draw up tourism profiles for each of the districts, and then to prioritize within those districts the work that we're doing on tourism investment and tourism infrastructure, and to ensure that those projects then are properly integrated within the district development model. As I've indicated previously, in areas where we have in fact done our master plans, we are then taking that a step further in terms of both ensuring that the initiatives which are long-term initiatives over the next 25 to 30 years do find expression in the DDM, but more importantly, that it also in fact finds expression within the infrastructure components of the DDMs, so that they are then taken into account in the budgeting and planning for those districts. So that's how the department has conceptualized our work within that DDM space, and how we are planning on ensuring that there is proper integration. We will, of course, then concentrate and focus our energy in those districts that, in fact, have high tourism potential to make sure that what we are doing now finds expression, not over the next 5 years, but over the next 5, 10, 15, 30 years. I hope that that then covers the question that Honorable Mpushe has asked about the DDM model. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Members, that was the presentation from the department. And on our agenda, there's an item on the draft minutes. And with your permission, I want us to defer that to the next meeting, looking at the time now. And our meeting is supposed to be concluded by 1:30. So I would suggest that we adjourn our meeting and consider those minutes in our next meeting, so that now we can allow members of parliament to prepare for the sitting. Some are supposed to connect virtually, and for sure we'll need to grab lunch before the meeting of parliament. Honorable April.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to support the suggestion that you are making to let it stand over until our next meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, with that said, let me take this opportunity to thank the department and honorable members for their participation in the meeting, and also for receiving the the presentation from the department, which is so important. The APP and the budget are very important presentations to us. The DG has agreed that anytime as a portfolio committee, when we need the presentation on their MOU with DPSA, we must just summon them to the portfolio committee. They are ready to table that particular report. And with that said, we are going to look into our program as the portfolio committee and try to fit the department into it for this specific report. And thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for gracing always our meetings. We really appreciate your presence. And yeah, so thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chairperson.